www.thesound.org.
Let's get it started in here.
I hear Kofefe.
I'm gonna wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes. Something without wanting love bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you.
Bernie Sanders just changed the game again.
And the world's all right with me.
Carl, what did you do?
Just one look at you.
Can you dig it?
Hillary Clinton is a bigot.
Gonna be. Okay, let's do this. Okay, but if you're going to ride my then please pull my hair, okay?
Wait, somebody else just entered the race for the White House?
Who is that guy?
I have no idea.
Look at his face. He looks so lost. He looks like he wandered on stage and doesn't know what's happening.
Billionaire Tom Steyer announces a 2020 White House run.
Why?
Well, because Eric Swalwell left.
He's like, oh, this is my time to shine.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna take all of his support.
Swalwell's out, and that guy is
that
in.
Guy's in.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
I
assume he's a Democrat.
I assume.
I suppose we should know who he is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, either way, he clearly likes to lose, whether he's a Republican or a Democrat, because he's not gonna win either way.
I hope this is not how it's gonna go for the rest of the election cycle moving into next year, where every time somebody drops out, somebody else jumps in.
just when you thought that maybe the field was thinning a little bit.
Right.
Nope, no, just kidding.
A billionaire, Tom Steyer, announces it. Well, I wasn't going to because that Swalwell guy, you know, but now that he's gone, I suppose I'll jump into the race now.
Yeah. I just feel they've already had a debate. It's at this point, with this many candidates, they've already had a debate. Anybody who jumps in now, it just seems so late to the game. I mean, I know that it's really early on. I know that was a ridiculously early debate. But, I mean, just by that standard, I guess, it just seems pointless.
The completely baseless hot take that I have, right, on that is that him being a billionaire, right? I wonder if there actually is more to him jumping in being the fact that he's not necessary. Like, he's not a politician. He's not somebody running for office that is, you know, he's got no reason to go and raise his name profile. Yeah. He's already a billionaire. So is he seeing, like, Steyer, right?
I think it's a Tom Steyer.
Tom Steyer, sure. Is that guy, does he have some internal data that shows that this is still very much, I mean, I suppose it still very much is
right.
Wide open. We are still only in July of 2019.
Right.
That just popped up on the popped up on the monitor. Welcome to Justice and Drew for a Wednesday. Drew will be back in studio with us tomorrow morning. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
Nice to see you this morning.
Nice to see you too.
Got a busy show, packed show today. So Cassie Smedley, she's the RNC Deputy Communications Director. She'll be calling us right around 7 o'clock this morning, talking about the RNC and speaking of the election, the RNC and President Donald Trump's fundraising efforts. So the numbers are really, really good for President Donald Trump. So we'll get her thoughts on that. Representative Ilhan Omar apparently is no fan of the truth. She apparently is a big old liar, self-admittedly. We have a story that we will share with you right around 8 o'clock this morning. Yeah, she kept a group of school children at a high school, I believe. I may be wrong on that. I think it was a high school. She kept a group of children. Yes, it was a high school. Like 400 students, right? Yeah. She kept them waiting for a half hour, so they lost their lunch break.
All
so they could hear Representative Ilhan Omar tell a fake story as if it were true. The Washington Examiner decided to research her tale that she told the children after they lost their lunch break because she was a half hour late, and found out that even she admitted, yeah, that some of that might not have been accurate of what I said, but, you know, who cares? I'm morally right.
My heart's in the right place.
Yeah, she's forever the victim, so she doesn't have to tell the truth. It doesn't matter. So we will bring you that story. Also, Jesse Kelly will be joining us right around 8:35, fellow iHeart radio host, Twitter provocateur. The story that we will be diving into with Jesse Kelly will give you a bit of a preview. I have put out the Jeff O'Brien signal, so he might be joining us as well, because I'd be curious to get his thoughts on this. Did you see the updates on the Facebook standards that came out? Have you seen this yet?
You know, I've been kind of following it.
So this started making the rounds yesterday, and it was circulating on Twitter, and that's how this started. Mm-hmm. Somebody had gone into the Facebook standards setting, okay, in the do not post section on its website, and subsequently since then, people have gone into their own Facebook pages and seen that this particular item is actually in there. And now some stories have been written up. This particular one is from the Washington Examiner. But Facebook updated its community standards to allow for users to call for high severity violence against sexual offenders, including death threats. Now, it's not just sexual offenders, though. It's basically anybody that Facebook has deemed as a hate group. So Facebook has a list of individuals that they have. Okay, and we will share that list of who they are later on. But Facebook changed its standards in July to allow an exception to its violence and incitement standard for individuals described as having carried out violent crimes or sexual offenses wherein criminal/predator status has been established by media reports, market knowledge of news events, etc. The exception allows users to make threats that could lead to death against alleged violent and sexual offenders. But again, even the Washington Examiner story does not get fully into who is on this particular list. Basically, what Facebook is saying is, we have standards doing the show. We are not allowed to incite violence.
Right.
Okay. You cannot do it. There are laws against this. What Facebook is basically saying is, hey, you can go and call for acts of violence as long as it's against individuals that we think it's okay to call to go and threaten with violence. It is an incredibly scary scenario, and I'll explain why, because you could make the argument that, well, just don't be on Facebook, it's just Facebook, whatever.
Yeah.
The problem is that's not the place where we're at now in America when it comes to these types of ideas grabbing hold within culture and then expanding. Mm-hmm. My point is, if Facebook is starting to do this, then there obviously is now a movement or a belief that punching a Nazi is okay. I'm really boiling it down to its essence, but that's where we're kind of coming around to, is that you shouldn't go and harm anybody, but you know what? If they're a Nazi, you can go ahead and walk up and punch them. 651-989-5855. We'll give you a few more details on this before we dive straight into Sam's Top 5, assuming that everything is scoured appropriately.
It is.
All right, excellent. That's all coming up.
A terrible thing to waste.
We will be talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien coming up after 8 o'clock this morning here on Justice and Drew. Sam's Top 5 is on the way. Definitely want to get his thoughts, and I've been spending some time kind of looking at the standards that we have currently when it comes to threats against individuals. And the social norms are that, and Sam and I were just talking about this during the break, the social norms are you just don't make death threats against people. I don't care who they are.
Yeah, just don't do it.
You just don't do that. I don't care how well known and how bad and horrible they are. You just don't do that. And my concern here when it comes to Facebook sanctioning violent threats against dangerous individuals is another version here that we have from Breitbart. It's less about what Facebook is doing, because I don't really give that big of a rip from Facebook, because we can leave Facebook. And we had a great conversation with our counterterrorism experts And he really is sort of a cultural zeitgeist political expert. The guy is just super knowledgeable, David Gartenstein Ross. We talked to him yesterday. He's a CEO of Valens Global now. We had a great conversation with him in the 7 o'clock hour that if you missed it, I would really encourage you to go to the iHeartRadio app and download it when the show is over today, talking about Facebook and Facebook's relevancy and the policies that they have and booting individuals from the platform. So my fear is less about Facebook doing this because Facebook can go and do what Facebook wants to do. Mm-hmm. My concern over this is, one, why is Facebook, being a private company, going to, at least for the moment, get a free pass on doing something like this when standards are we cannot do this? Like, if we come on the air today and start calling for violence against a pedophile, right?
Right.
Alleged pedophile, like a right. Zepstein guy, or yep. or even somebody like ISIS or a Nazi. We cannot do that if we want to keep our jobs. So is Facebook going to be allowed to do this as a private company? And two, if they are, is this where we are heading in society now, where this becomes the accepted norm? Right. The statements of intent to commit high severity violence, calls for high severity violence, unless the target is an organization or individual covered in the dangerous individuals or organization's policy. Okay. Including content where no target is specified, but a symbol represents the target and or individual, or includes a visual of an armament to represent violence. So is Antifa deemed as a hateful, violent organization by Facebook, and therefore we can call for violence on Facebook against Antifa? I don't know if they're on the list or not, right?
Right.
You still shouldn't do that.
No. Yeah.
Statements advocating for high severity violence. Okay, right? So these are threats that can lead to death, where threat is defined as any of the following. Statements advocating for high severity violence unless, so you can't do that unless the target is an organization or individual covered in the dangerous individuals of organization's policy, aspirational or conditional statements to commit high severity violence, unless the target or organization or individual is covered in the dangerous individual or organization's list. So according to the Breitbart article, it says here, who counts as dangerous individual according to Facebook? They have a list. It includes InfoWars host Alec Jones, populist pundit Paul Joseph Watson, conservative activist Laura Loomer, Louis Farrakhan, and Milo Yiannopoulos.
These are real people.
Right.
They're real people that have real families and real homes that they go to at night. And that just feel a little bit differently than the people running Facebook, essentially.
It's gonna kind of be the woke show today. There's a lot of there's a lot of talk around wokeness, and this is sort of Facebook's, like, is this the new version? Is this a version of wokeness where, hey man, you know what? You can go and call for acts of violence against these people because they're just that bad. Like, Facebook has kind of nuked the societal and social norm of how we are supposed to conduct ourselves towards one another. So this is going to warrant a much larger discussion throughout the show this morning. And again, we'll be talking with our lawyer extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien, coming up right after 8 o'clock. And we'll also get into this. Really curious to see what Jesse Kelly's thoughts are when we talk to him at 8:35. Right now, let's get into Sam's Top 5, powered by Early Bird Electric.
Number 1.
Trump tweeted about the Pledge of Allegiance controversy in St. Louis Park. We shared this tweet on air yesterday. I believe that it happened yesterday morning and we discussed it, but it's definitely worth touching on again. From Carol Levin, on Tuesday morning, President Trump tweeted, "Outrage is growing in the great state of Minnesota where our patriots are now having to fight for the right to say the Pledge of Allegiance." His comments came after a Monday study session held in St. Louis Park City Council chambers when it exploded into confrontation. Protesters were taking aim at council members for voting last month to remove the Pledge of Allegiance from the start of council meetings. And that crowd, which included some military veterans, constituents, and the chair of the Minnesota GOP, chanted USA and loudly recited the Pledge of Allegiance at least 3 times during a council discussion that lasted for the better part of an hour. Although council members took no votes on Monday, it was not a regular board meeting. They did acknowledge publicly that they may have rushed into the decision to remove the pledge and began charting a path to gather community input about the topic. Initially, council members voted for removal because some argued that the Pledge of Allegiance could discourage non-citizens from the political process. okay. All right.
All right. All right. Apparently, they don't realize that they live in the United States of America, and they don't have to do the pledge if they don't they don't want to.
You right.
Know, traditions are okay.
Yeah. It's patriotism is okay.
Right. And it's okay to not decide to do the pledge if it's there, but the reality is that pledge should stay because it's part of our traditions, and not only are traditions okay, but they are also very important. Mm-hmm. In a world of identity politics, it cracks me up where in the world of identity politics, where it's certainly dominating the left, there is a movement, at least the appearance of a movement, to strip away the patriotic identity of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and again, I won't go too far down the rabbit hole on this, but that's what a part of this is. This is this idea that, well, you know, we've got to be diverse, and so we can't identify us as being patriotic in the United States of America because we've done some bad things in the past, and not everybody here is legal.
The super woke council member Ann Mavity, who sponsored the original changes to the meeting protocol, previously told Care 11 that non-citizens shouldn't have to say a pledge to do business with the city.
And they don't. They just don't have to do it.
Yeah.
They just sit there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Just don't do it. However, the decision has led to a lot of backlash and even national media attention, including the president's tweet. Mavity has backtracked a little, saying that she supports a detailed research process that incorporates feedback from constituents.
Yeah, and if they had any kind of leadership skills, they would have just rescinded the vote and just put it back into place and been done with it. But instead, they're taking this route of, well, we need to study it. We need to look at it. We need to figure out, you know, just which wokeness we want to go ahead and embrace. I hope that it comes to I obviously hope they keep it. Okay.
Yeah.
But I hope that it comes to a firm sort of resolution quickly so we set a standard on what kind of reaction we're going to get. Ann Mavity was super stupid in thinking this wasn't going to cause some kind of controversy, unless that's what she was going for. Right? You're incredibly short-sighted if you think that people aren't going to be upset about this, right? It tells you how misguided you are, and you probably shouldn't be representing any city, you know, certainly not the one that we currently do business in. But I hope this gets resolved quickly and they leave it in place so that a standard is in place when it comes to when these controversies erupt. And it reminds me a bit of the conversation that we had with Pete Hegseth from Fox News yesterday, talking about that ridiculous Bernie Sanders video where they're all being just so glib and flippant about canceling student debt, and we're just going to get rid of it. We're just going to cancel it and just get rid of it. I mean, like it's like there are no consequences whatsoever for doing it. Like it's just like it's magic. And talked about this with Pete Hegseth saying, you know, I hope Bernie Sanders gets the nomination for the Democrats and then loses in a landslide just to prove that kind of wokeness, right?
Yeah.
Isn't accepted by the majority of individuals here in the United States of America. All right, more of Sam's Top 5 coming up. 103.5 FM. Kicking off Wednesday morning here on Justice and Drew, as we do every day with Sam's Top 5. I am John Justice. We'll get back to Sam's Top 5 here in just a moment. Drew will be back in studio tomorrow. I believe he's back in town, or at least close to being back in town. They were doing a long drive from North Carolina yesterday, but he'll be back in studio tomorrow with us. Joe Pags, fellow iHeartRadio host right here on Twin Cities News Talk, was actually on Fox News this morning talking about the first story in Sam's Top 5, the controversy in St. Louis Park, right here where the station's located, over the Pledge of Allegiance. Trump tweeting about it yesterday, so Fox News had Joe Pags on this morning talking about it. And I would really like to pick the brain of some of the council members, especially Ann Mavity, who brought it up to begin with.
And, the one who started it all.
Yeah, I just go, what in the heck were you thinking?
And was it worth it?
Yeah. It's one of a couple of things, right? Either you... For those that don't know, the St. Louis City Council voted without public input to do away with the Pledge of Allegiance, and of course, uproar and controversy ensued. You know, they're citing diversity and sensitivity to those who, you know, might have a problem with the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. And this is what's funny to me is that, okay, so you are, well, let me not get too far ahead of myself. Again, either you don't care what the controversy is going to be, right? Mm-hmm. Either you've got enough brain power to understand what most rational people would, that doing away with this tradition is going to spark some frustration and anger, and you don't care, or you're in your own little bubble, right? You're in your bubble, so and you that bubble is so just filled with people that think like you, and you step out of that bubble so infrequently that you're completely oblivious to the fact that this is going to cause a controversy, right? It's got to be one or the, you know, which one is it? That's what I want to know. How do you not know this is going to be controversial? And with that, your justification for doing it is because some people, because they haven't provided any examples, at least as far as I've seen, of anybody going and saying, we're not going to get involved with St. Louis Park politics because you do the Pledge of Allegiance, which is the argument that Ann Mavity and some of the council members put forward, right? They didn't want to turn anybody off from getting involved in politics because they might not feel included, because they may not be in the country here illegally, or they may not be in the country here legally, and therefore the Pledge of Allegiance might not sit well with them, so they may not want to go and take part in politics. Okay, so if that's your argument, how do you not realize that you are going to be disenfranchising an exponentially larger group of individuals by getting rid of it who will not want to get involved in politics? You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to try to make a few people happy, right? Apparently. We don't know if they exist.
Or at least try to make herself feel happy.
Right.
You know,
At the expense of a whole bunch of people who now are mad at you and probably aren't going to want to partake in any of your political nonsense because you did that. I don't understand the rationale of some people and how they simply cannot see, unless, again, they're just these villain types. That's how villains act. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really want individuals involved in our St. Louis Park City Council politics and policy making who would want to go and do the Pledge of Allegiance. So we'll go ahead and disenfranchise that whole group of people. Right, at the expense of a small group of people, who, to make sure that they go and feel included, and then we feel more woke. Joe Pags made a great point this morning during the segment on Fox News, saying that, you know, this is not a conservative district. It's Ilhan Omar's district, for crying out loud. Speaking of supervillains, right? And they got a bunch of individuals from St. Louis Park to come and protest this in a district that's not conservative. I do not understand the mentality, and I cannot relate to the mentality of leadership that thinks that this was a good idea or just didn't have the mental capacity to realize that it was going to not just make big local news because of the frustration, but also potentially national news, to the point where the president actually went and tweeted about it yesterday. Congratulations, St. Louis Park. You guys are the best.
Number two.
The U.S. Geological Survey has warned Southern California to expect more big earthquakes to come.
Man, just bring on the big one. Just get it all over with.
Can we just sink it? Everybody evacuate California or don't.
Yeah, there was a subsequent story that apparently there's been some greater activity going on at Yellowstone National Park as of late.
Ooh.
Yeah, if that sucker blows, we're in trouble.
We're done.
Yeah, but at this point in time, I just, you know, as a God-fearing man, I just kind of go, hey, you know, is God just setting the stage?
Is God hitting the reset button,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, you know, maybe he's
good
just,
job.
We're just about, you know, we were close, but now with the city council and their actions, I think it's time that I go ahead and get involved. I'm just, those are just jokes, people.
If Ann Mavity pushed us over the edge, makes Yellowstone explode. I'm going to have some very strong words for you, Anne, from Fox News. California's uncanny earthquake pause is over. It should have already had several big ones by now, apparently. All that pressure has to go somewhere. Now geologists are nervously eyeing 8 nearby volcanoes and the Yellowstone supervolcano that's been acting so weird.
Told you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Local seismologist Lucy Jones told the Los Angeles Times these quakes do not make the big one less likely. There is about a 1 in 20 chance that this location will be having an even bigger earthquake in the next few days that we have not yet seen the biggest earthquake of the sequence. In part, that's because California is way overdue for, quote, the big one. The past century has been abnormally quiet in terms of large ground-rupturing earthquakes. The last one, the big one, or the last big one, was in 1906 when a force 7.9 earthquake realigned the real estate of San Francisco.
Pretty much.
And U.S. geologists are beginning to suspect that this is not just a lucky roll of the dice. Something deep under California appears to be changing, and its implications are yet to be understood.
Yeah, there's we have a more sort of show relevant topic when it comes to the minimum wage. That's a good example of this next hour, because that the Congressional Budget Office put out their report on what would happen if we were to go to a nationwide $15 minimum wage. And it's really funny because in the wake of that, you've got a whole bunch of headlines going, all these people would benefit from the pay increase, right? And you have like one outlet reason going, yeah, they're ignoring the fact that like 1.3 million jobs are going to be lost. My point is, there's a couple of different angles you can look on this. One is, yes, California is long overdue for the big one. 2 years ago when I went to Yellowstone, there was a lot of talk around an eruption taking place at Yellowstone. The flip side to that coin is, there's also some experts out there going that a lot of this is easing tension. Like, it's still inevitable that eventually Yellowstone's going to go up. May not be in my lifetime or your lifetime, maybe your children's lifetime. Same thing with California, but there's also arguments out there saying, yeah, there's also experts that say, this is not good, but we could be, you know, it could just be California stretching, you know, and taking,
just, you know, just stretching
just taking
it out.
We're not going to go all in yet.
And my big takeaway from this right now is that no matter how many cities in California ban things like straws, plastic bags, whatever efforts they're making towards saving the environment, quote unquote, doesn't matter because they're just going to break off and sail away into the ocean anyway for reasons that they cannot have any kind of impact on, because the earth just does stuff sometimes.
Logan, my 17-year-old, spent the week in California with my family, right? They live in Southern California, so I don't want the big one to happen, obviously, because all of my family's in Southern California.
He must have enjoyed his time there before they go.
Except for my mom, who's in Arizona. Be that as it may. So he did. He had a great time. He, you know, wants to be a pilot, and he's, you know, working a job and going to high school and saving his money to be a pilot. And so he spent a bunch of time at LAX, Los Angeles International Airport. And he also spent a bunch of time at In-N-Out, because he loves In-N-Out burgers, right? So he said he had, like, In-N-Out, like, eight times. So he comes downstairs yesterday. I'm watching TV, and we were talking about his trip. And he goes, yeah, you know, at In-N-Out, I had to ask for a straw. And I go, I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, they weren't giving me a straw. I go, what do you mean they weren't giving you? No, he's like, they'll give you one, but you have to ask for it. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I kept drinking, because he's super thin, right? He's 17 and just the dude's just a rail. I mean, I don't know how many burgers he ate. Didn't put a pound on because he's got the, you know, metabolism of a hummingbird. So he was drinking a bunch of chocolate shakes. He's like, yeah, every time I went to go get a drink or a chocolate shake, I had to ask for a straw every time because they don't just automatically give it to you.
I mean, at least they didn't ban him, I guess.
Yeah. But, and it's so stupid.
And then, you know, to Minnesota's credit, you go to like a restaurant in Minnesota, they just have like a pile of dispensers. You can just grab as many as you want. I guess we're not woke enough yet.
I don't think they're allowed to ask you if you want one either. I think you actually, like, you just get it and you go, like,
you ask.
You know?
Yeah.
But if you get Ann Mavity there and she's confused, how am I supposed to drink this?
Number three.
Ariana Grande played her finest local gig to date, but the crowd couldn't see her.
I love this story.
From the Pioneer Press. Ariana Grande has lived a lot of life since she had last headlined St. Paul's XL Energy Center in March 2017. And on Monday, she turned in her finest local gig to date following two KDWB Jingle Balls and headlining gigs at the X in 2015 and 2017. For the first time, she seemed truly comfortable on stage, radiating new confidence and enjoying a much more natural chemistry with her dancers and the audience. The large but simple stage gave Grande and her dancers plenty of room to play, too, with a U-shaped runway extending out onto the arena floor and creating an enclosed VIP area in the middle of the stage for fans with some deep pockets. Grande and her crew even traipsed through the VIP area a few times, with Grande stopping to sing several songs from a small circular platform.
Okay.
But unfortunately, those who bought the in-stage tickets easily enjoyed the best view of Grande. For truly unfathomable reasons, Grande chose to once again perform without traditional spotlights. Instead, a series of red, blue, pink, and orange lights barely illuminated Grande, who spent the evening running around in the colorful but dim shadows. A friend who was also at the concert and is a big Grande fan said that it was the best, said that it best in a message, or said it best in a message sent midway through. She said, it's like we're watching the whole show through transition lenses and they haven't switched over to indoors yet.
I can't. I would be so incredibly frustrated.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you not just like have one spotlight?
Yeah.
Even if it's just dim.
And she's a little person.
She is little.
You know, I mean, I would be so unbelievably frustrated if I wouldn't be, if I went and paid all that money to go to a show and yet it was just completely washed out.
Yeah.
Number four.
Another person was caught on camera licking ice cream in a store.
I don't understand this. There was another story I saw this morning of some other woman like opening up ice cream and spitting into it and closing it and putting it back in the cupboard. Yeah. I don't know why this has become a thing.
I don't know. I don't know why. People, please don't wreck my ice cream. Please. From CNN, you can also find video of this available at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com on the Justice and Drew page.
Just if you want to see what kind of monster would go and do this and how much glee they get from it. I don't understand.
Louisiana police say a 36-year-old man was inspired by a viral video of a teenager licking a tub of Bluebell ice cream to seek his own 15 minutes of fame. Assumption Parish Sheriff's deputies arrested Lennis Martin III on Saturday after receiving a tip from a grocery store in Belrose. Someone recorded Martin pulling a carton of Bluebell ice cream from a freezer, opening it, licking the frozen dessert, and poking it with his finger before putting it back on the shelf.
I don't
think the ice cream consented to that. Detectives found evidence that Martin posted the video on Facebook suggesting that he was seeking attention for the alleged misdeed.
So here's a question that I have with that. So it's on Facebook. So are we allowed to go and threaten violence against that person now?
Does he fit into the Facebook policy? Is that allowed?
Hopefully this is a thing that stops soon because it should not ever be a trend. And again, if you wanted to see the grossness of it and the glee in the person's eye after they did it,
so gross.
Go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page.
Number five.
A Minneapolis homeowner was forced to pay the city $20,000 for a water line repair on the other side of the street. From Fox News. A Minneapolis homeowner who found his water line leaking last month must pay the city $20,000 out of pocket to have it fixed. Dan Wilk said that he noticed water coming out of his front lawn while doing yard work 6 weeks ago and called the city to let them know. He said he assumed he owned from the valve to my house. But the water line, it turned out, was on the other side of the street, cutting beneath four traffic lanes. Thanks to a 27-year-old city ordinance, he must pay for the replacement of all lead segments of that water line, a job that will cost upwards of $21,000. Wilk told Minneapolis's WCCO the bids came in at $17,000 to $21,000. That's a little bit of a shock, to say the least. Though the lead line isn't leaking, another piece of the line is, which means that he is responsible for fixing everything under Central Avenue. He's now lobbying city officials to amend the nearly 30-year-old ordinance, given that any homeowner along major roads could be subject to a $20,000 charge from one little leak in their water line. He said, I would really like Minneapolis to take responsibility for what is under their property.
Yeah, I have to assume that the city will step up and take care of this despite the policy, right? I have to assume, because there's no way he's going to pay for that. I mean, I wouldn't pay for that.
And then again,
if that's the ordinance and they adhere to it, then that means that everybody, you know, in that area is going to have to deal with the same situation if they have the same problem. I have to imagine that they would most likely step up and say, hey, we'll handle our part of it, right?
Hopefully it becomes a big enough story that they just do.
Yeah. The city's probably upset that they quoted him at $20,000 because they probably would have ended up charging like $1 million if they were the ones to go and fix it in the first place. So, nice job this morning, Sam.
Thank you.
Real quick, we had a couple of individuals yesterday who passed away who are of major significance. Ross Perot, the self-made Texas billionaire who rose from a childhood of Depression-era poverty and twice mounted outsider campaigns for president, passed away at age 89. The cause of death was leukemia, according to a family spokesperson. I was not heavily involved in politics back in 1992. Okay.
Okay.
However, I say that because I knew of Ross Perot. He was a huge deal during that election cycle to the point where I was very aware of who he was, and it was very relevant to me at the time. He achieved 19% of the vote in 92, stands among the best showings by any independent candidate in the past century. He spent $63.5 million of his own money, and I remember these, much of it on 30-minute television spots. He used charts and graphs to make his points, summarizing them with a line that became his national catchphrase. It's just that simple. Right. Some Republicans blamed Perot for Bush's loss to Clinton, as Perot garnered the largest percentage of votes for a third-party candidate since former President Theodore Roosevelt's 1912 bid. And again, I wasn't paying attention to politics at this time. I was, you know, into my young life, and I absolutely was aware of who Ross Perot was and how popular he was. Mm-hmm. He was kind of the Ron Paul of his day. Also yesterday, Emmy Award-winning actor Rip Torn passed away at age 88. Probably for the majority of individuals, he had dramas, Cross Creek, Sweet Bird of Youth, but at more as of late, 30 Rock, Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Men in Black films as well. Yep. He's a great actor. He passed away at age 88. Question that I have is, who's usually these happen in threes. So, I'm not trying to be glib. That's just the case. Usually it does. Well, hopefully that's not the case. So, all right. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Cassie Smedley. She is the RNC Deputy Communications Director. And we'll be discussing the RNC fundraising and Trump's fundraising efforts. It's all coming up.